Welcome back to the Blake Swihart Podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux, and today I am joined by Brian Joyner and Matt Collins of Over the Monster. Guys, how we doing?
Tired.
Wonderful.
Nice. We have two differing levels of excitement today. Matt, why are you so tired over there?
Because it's snowing and I've been stuck inside all day and I don't like being stuck inside all day.
Yeah,
so,
true.
Out of it.
It stinks. You could always go out and shovel your neighbors like a good Samaritan.
I got a plow for my own driveway. I'm not going to go shovel. I'm like the only house on my street with a driveway anyway, so I'm living the high life.
Oh, okay. All right, guys, so let's get right to it. As promised, this is the Blake Swihart Podcast, brought to you by Blake Swihart's biggest fan. And Blake has been continuing to tear it up in spring training, and it was described as a deluge of trade interest has been
directed. Deluge.
Deluge. Oh, come on. That's the same word. That is the
deluge and deluge?
It's the same thing.
You're
it's
wrong.
It's the same word.
All right. Well, anyhow, a big rainstorm of trade interest has been coming at Dave Dombrowski. So what do you guys think of this? Do you think there's any real possibility that Blake Swihart gets moved for something of value?
No. Why would anyone give up? I mean, the report said that the Red Sox wanted a top prospect. And why would anybody give up a top prospect for Blake Swihart? No.
Why wouldn't they?
I just... What?
I love it.
Why? I mean, what's the reason? Because he's having a good spring training?
He's having a good spring training. He's finally healthy. I mean, this is a guy that was the number one rated catching prospect in the game. This guy was a top 20 prospect at one point. So clearly there's still a lot of talent there.
And I think that's why the Red Sox, I'm fine with the Red Sox kind of holding out for an unrealistic package. But I mean, how many times do we have to see Sam Travis light up the Grapefruit League before we're finally going to just like not react at all to spring training stats? I looked at the pitchers. So, here are the pitchers that Blake Swihart has had extra base hits off this spring. Dietrich Enns, two off Gabriel Ynoa, one off Jose Mesa, one off Johnny Helweg, one off Charlie Morton, and one off Chi Wei Hu. And Charlie Morton's all right, and that's about it. I mean, it means nothing to me.
Wow. Matt, really bringing us down right now.
It's
us,
just...
No, us. No, us.
You. Yeah, I think it's all you, man.
So, Brian, you're on board with this?
It is bringing us down because I would love them to trade him for something good. I would love them to... I think you have said as much. If someone's going to overpay for Swihart, the Red Sox should obviously take it because he's not so vital to their plans that they can't afford to, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, I doubt – I'm suspicious of so-and-so is getting nibbles because I just think there's a lot of self-serving rumor planting going on, and it's hard to tell what's real and what isn't. I put some stock in the fact that other teams theoretically want Swihart at a price, but that's all I'm willing to sort of get behind, given what I've seen.
If you're a rebuilding team that doesn't have anything going at catcher right now, why wouldn't you want to take that risk, though?
But why would you want to give up a top prospect if you're a rebuilding team?
Say you don't give up a top prospect. Say you give up, I don't know, a back-end top 100 guy. Not like a franchise-altering player, but somebody who's, you know, has a future in the MLB. Why wouldn't you do that?
I mean, maybe, but I don't know. I mean, you have to really love Swihart, and there's a lot of risk in trading for a guy who hasn't really done anything for 2 years except play well in spring training. And I know there's injuries, and it's not all Swihart's fault, but at the end of the day, you're taking a massive risk there, and one that could bite you in the ass pretty quickly.
I don't know. I guess I'm just not on board because I think that a 26-year-old with that prospect pedigree is not as big a risk as, say, you know, an 18-year-old prospect playing in the GCL or something like that. I mean, those guys are big risks. So if you take a flyer on somebody who's a little bit closer in proximity, like, Isn't that a risk worth taking?
You really think that the 18-year-old is going to be the top prospect? That's, I agree with you that that's, if the Red Sox were going to trade him, some random 18-year-old would be fine. But I just don't see that happening. Also, you say he's a 26-year-old with a prospect pedigree. He's 26. So I,
Brian, how old was Veritek when he started catching for the Red Sox?
I don't know, but I know that he was had actually been catching for some discernible amount of time.
He was 26.
Okay, fine, but he had been catching.
And also, I mean, there's a lot of guys like Veritek who didn't work out too. Like,
sure.
And I mean, look, I don't want this to make it sound like I'm bashing Swihart. I like Swihart, and I want the Red Sox to hold on to him. I just don't see a world in which another team is going to value him so much that they're going to give up something that the Red Sox would be
willing
to.
So, Jake, you're saying we should take Heathcliff Slocum for Swihart?
No, I don't think that was offered.
Okay.
Anyhow, so let's talk about the roster spots here, though, because Blake Swihart is fighting for his life on the team, and if he doesn't get traded, there's potential that he doesn't make the roster just because of numbers. Do you guys feel like it would make more sense for the team to keep either Sandy Leon or Brock Holt than it would to keep Blake Swihart?
I don't think there's any way that Swihart doesn't make the roster or is traded. Like if he's not traded, then he's going to be on the roster. I can't. And that's, I've changed my thoughts on that over the last few weeks. But at this point, I just don't see how he's not on the roster.
So who does that come at the expense of then?
I think it's between Holt and Marrero for the last two spots. And I think they probably should keep Marrero, and I think they're probably going to keep Holt.
What is the reasoning there, do you think?
For keeping Holt?
Yeah, for keeping Holt. Like, I can't even really understand the argument at this point, other than, like, he's a clubhouse guy.
Yeah, well, I think that's kind of it. He's just been there. He's kind of like an institution at this point. And again, it's not what I would do, but I mean, I feel like he just feels like the kind of guy who they're not going to option to Pawtucket.
They certainly have been putting him out there in the spring. I mean, they've not been hiding him. Now, to some degree, you don't always put guys out there that you plan on necessarily plan on keeping. But he's sort of a known quantity, and the fact that they keep sending him out there for whatever reason has me agreeing with Matt. I mean, look, Marrero was also like not an inspiring player, but I think that any indications we've gotten would signal that Holt was going to make the team. So I think that also is part of why the Swihart trade stuff is out there. I think it's another clue to that end, because I think Swihart and Holt have more potential overlap than Marrero and Swihart, because Marrero is a defensive specialist and Holt is not.
What are the indications you think that they've given so far that they're leaning towards Holt?
I don't know if there's, for me, if there's been any indications, or it's that my default assumption has always been that they're going to keep Holt, and they haven't really done anything yet to change my mind on that.
Yeah, I would say that, and plus the fact they're still totally moving him around everywhere in the spring training lineup. They're just really exploiting his versatility, which signals that is something that they are still very interested in, which is, I mean, I know it's a known quantity at this point, but just that, and just the fact that Marrero has a more limited number of places he can play.
I guess for me, the whole playing Holt a lot and playing him all over the diamond is just as much them advertising Holt's value to other teams as it is them wanting to see, you know, what type of player he is this spring and how healthy he is and how he adapts to other positions. Like, the Red Sox know everything there is to know about Holt right now. If anything, I think they're trying to prove that he's healthy.
Well, I agree with that, but I don't think that there's anything other teams don't know about Holt, whereas I do think there's other things they don't know about. There's possibly things they don't know about Swihart. So it's possible they're showcasing both of them, but just the situation is such that Swihart is a more obvious trade chit. That would be my guess.
I'm not so sure they're trying to show other teams that Holt's healthy as much as they're trying to figure out for themselves if Holt is healthy.
Yeah.
And kind of see how he looks. Because, I mean, I think that's a big thing. If Holt is really healthy and he's, like, at his peak potential or whatever, I mean, I think he is the better player than Marrero.
Speaking of other infield options, did any of you guys see the picture of Marco Hernandez the other day running at spring training? He had his chain in his mouth or something like that. And he was like basically doing sprints. I was shocked at how jacked he is. I did not expect that for a guy that size.
I think where we pretty we all kind of underrate how jacked every baseball player is. We don't really think of them as athletes in the same way as like football and basketball players, but I think pretty much all these dudes are jacked.
That reminds me of many years ago on Saturday Night Live when Jeter was playing and Seth Meyers, he hosted the show. And Seth Meyers says, you know, I always said I would beat the crap out of Derek Jeter, and I can now see I won't do that. And even just seeing him sitting next to like a normal person, you're like, oh, even the guys who don't look huge are enormous.
Yeah, even like a guy like John Lackey is enormous.
My dad is a doctor and he lives in Arizona, and he was in a hospital. This was years ago, so forgive him. But he saw this guy. He's like, who is this massive dude just hanging here? And it was Schilling. He was in like the kid's wing or something. And he just called me. He's like, I cannot believe how big this guy is.
Yeah, I had a similar experience to that when I met Clemens. I was actually bartending, and Clemens came into the bar I was working at, and I was just like, this guy is the size of two people put together. Enormous.
Was that a retired Clemens?
That was a retired Clemens, yeah. So he was definitely
He kind of let himself
thicker.
Go.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's one of those guys who let himself go after he was done.
Yeah. Not the most friendly guy in the world. Definitely.
I hate him. I'm not surprised by that even a little bit.
Nope. But Doug Mirabelli was. So.
Whoa, that's exactly the opposite of his reputation.
Oh, really?
I didn't know Doug Mirabelli had a reputation.
Yeah, I didn't either.
I thought he had a reputation of being sort of a dick.
Maybe. I've never met anybody who's ever interacted with Doug Mirabelli.
Huh. Well, maybe the listeners can give us some stories about these two individuals. I'd like that for the next show for sure. Any Red Sox you've met and had positive or negative interactions with, I'd love to hear about it. Let's move on to David Price, because David Price has recently been quoted as saying that he could be in line for his best ever season. He says he's feeling really healthy. He told Rob Bradford that, you know, the elbow feels normal for the first time. He feels good. This is pretty intriguing stuff here. If David Price is really feeling 100%, the Red Sox have a huge weapon on their hands.
Yeah, David Price is kind of the guy who can take this team to the next level from where they were last year. I mean, I know J.D. Martinez is kind of looked at as that guy, but I mean, if they get like something close to prime David Price to pair with prime Chris Sale, I mean, that's a ridiculous 1-2 punch. So hopefully he's right. I don't really put a ton of stock into spring training quotes, but I won't be the Debbie Downer again.
What about you, Brian? What do you think about this? You think this is just him talking?
I think it's just Matt saying talking. I'm not going to be the Debbie Downer again. Give it like 45 seconds. but of course it's just him talking, but the fact with Price, and I've harped on this a lot, and nobody who actually reads what I write is going to want to hear it, but if they do, they like me, so whatever. He's been better than we think. So if he's just a little bit better than he has been, that alone would be that he doesn't have to put together his best season. He just has to put together a better season than 2 years ago, which is pretty good. So I think that what he's saying and what we're looking for him might not be the same thing, but there's plenty of room for him to fall into that any excess value he provides is going to go a long way.
Yeah, that first year that he played with the Red Sox was definitely a very underrated season. And we've talked about that a bunch on the show here, but 230 innings, struck out almost nine guys per nine innings while walking under two. So granted, he did have a little bit of a home run problem that year, and it didn't seem like he was locating as well in the zone as he typically does. He was still really solid. I mean, the dude won 17 games for the team and was worth 4.4 wins by Fangraphs. So, I know Matt hates Fangraphs WAR, but still, the guy was productive.
How much was Cy Young Award winner Rick Porcello the same year?
Let's check. Porcello.
Because I think it's pretty close, if not less.
I don't really like any WAR to be
5.1.
Oh, okay.
So,
well, Matt, I too hate WAR. But
I just didn't want to make it sound like I was taking out pot shots at Fangraphs, though.
You hate all WAR, yeah, not just Fangraphs WAR.
Although I do kind of particularly hate their pitcher WAR. I like their batter WAR, or whatever that's worth. That's the better. What?
I'm a fan of Peace.
Okay. I don't know.
I told you 45 seconds. It was almost on the dot.
Oh, fuck me.
All right. So are we buying this, though, guys? Do we really think that he has the capability this year of being vintage Price? I mean, he only threw 74 innings last year. What are the odds that he gets the rope to throw 200-plus innings?
He gets the rope. I mean, he has the rope.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of whether he can do it. But I think there's a – it's definitely possible. He's very talented. Like, when we talk about baseball players, can they do this or that? At some point, there is a huge raw talent factor, and David Price does have the raw talent.
And he's only 32. I mean, we've seen guys come back from similar things at more advanced ages than David Price and put together vintage seasons. So it especially wouldn't be surprising for somebody with that Cy Young pedigree.
That's what I'm trying to do this year. My age 40 season. Really just knock it out of the park.
I'm rooting for you.
Thank you.
So, Matt, you did want to address what we talked about last time on the show, which is Brian's ability to get a hit in the major leagues. Can you tell us why Brian wouldn't be able to get a hit over the course of an entire major league baseball season?
Because it's really hard. I don't really even know what to say. Like, have you watched major league pitchers? They're crazy good, man.
They're ridiculous.
Like, they are super good. Like, if you watch a college pitcher, they're really good too, and then it's gonna be like 100 times that. My biggest issue was how easy you guys thought it was to bunt.
3 months. We said 3 months for him to
learn
how to bunt.
There are so many major league players who can't bunt major league pitching, and they've been doing it for more than 3 months.
No, but they don't practice. They don't practice bunting specifically.
Exactly.
Pitchers do.
In a row. Not for 3 months in a row. They pitch.
I'm in the Chili Davis situation where, even though he's not with the Sox anymore, he just works with Brian on bunting every single day.
I think that Brian would get hit in the hand with a bunt pretty early on, and then you would just be flinching every time. And that's nothing personal to you. I'd be doing the same thing too.
Wow, Brian.
I think if any of us are playing first base, the Red Sox might win 60 games if we were playing there every day.
So you think that essentially we'd be worth negative 30 WAR?
Yeah. So I was thinking about this. What do you think the worst player to appear in a major league game in any given season, if they were to play 162 games, what do you think their WAR would be? Like -5?
Something
I would
like
say.
That. Yeah.
Okay. I think I'm at least 6 times worse at baseball than that guy.
But isn't there like a limit where you just bottom out, and like if you just go up there and do nothing every single time?
I think if we're just talking about an average schmo like us, I don't know if there is a limit.
There's got to be some math done on this type of scenario. Brian, you're oddly quiet for someone whose manhood is being attacked right now.
I said it had nothing to do with Brian. You can substitute me in if you want.
I have said it has nothing to do with me, too. I didn't really want to review this because I think it's a matter – like, It's a purely hypothetical exercise that I'm. My theory is that if I just keep swinging the bat, eventually the ball might hit the bat, and if it hits the bat, the ball's going really fast, it might just dunk over someone's head. And you try that 700 times.
I think you might be able to get a hit.
My issue was more
with the fact that you guys thought that the Red Sox would be at least a 500 team. Flabbergasted me. That's all I have to say on the matter.
Looking back on the matter, I do think that maybe we were a little generous with the win totals.
I think we said 85. I started to backtrack, and Jake said, no, that sounds about right, and ended the discussion. But I think that...
Oh, yeah, blame it on me, Brian.
Oh, I'm not blaming it on you. I'm just saying that I think Matt is overstating it, and we understated it. That's all.
I made a scene in the Target parking lot when I heard you guys say that. So.
I would have liked to see that. What were you in there doing? Were you just shopping for stuff and you were listening to it, or what was happening?
I was pulling into Target when you guys were talking about that, and I had to take a few minutes to collect myself before I went to the store.
Oh, that's amazing. We got him, Bri.
Yeah, I mean, now it's all worth it. To hear that is fantastic.
All right, so let's move on from Price here to another pitcher in the rotation, Drew Pomerantz. He left a spring training start, his first spring training start, with an apparent elbow irritation. It came back that was just a flexor strain, so it seems like that's going to be a minor issue. And good news overall for Pomerantz in terms of it not being a serious injury. How does this affect the rotation going forward, guys? Do you think it has any sort of lasting effects?
Well, I think it's just something to keep an eye on for his next couple starts. I mean, I know he feels good now, and I have no reason to doubt that it won't be a big deal, but you just never know with elbow injuries. So just something to keep an eye on and hope that they don't have to dip any further into the depth chart when the season starts.
What's your confidence level in Brian Johnson right now?
I don't know how to answer that. On a scale of 1 to 10, like 5? I don't know. He's fine.
Do you think he can come up and be a serviceable starter? Let's say he had to start for, I don't know, a month of the season. Do you think that he would do okay?
Yeah, I think he could live with that. I think he would probably have a couple of rough starts in there and a couple of fine ones, and you can live with that for a month. I wouldn't want him in my rotation all year, but I'm fine with him as the guy to start in the fifth spot to start the year.
Any preference for you, Brian, on the fifth spot? Do you still think it's Johnson's to lose?
They seem to like him, and
he's out of options.
I the thing with Pomerantz is that last year's Pomerantz was the exception to Pomerantz. I mean, isn't it his thing that he gets hurt a lot? So we'll see what happens. With guys like that, I sort of just always expect the next injury to be around the corner. So, I mean, I sort of consider last year found money with him.
Well, no.
I kind of reject that premise.
Yeah.
And it's a very popular one, but I don't – and I've said it before too, but I looked more into it, and I don't really know where it came from. He made 32 starts last year, 31 appearances the year before with 30 starts, 53 appearances the year before with 9 starts. I mean, he's been pretty healthy for a few years running now.
I agree. I was just going to say the same exact thing.
Then he's due. You know how baseball works? Then he's due.
I don't know. Those are some pretty important years to be healthy, though. Basically, we're talking about 26, 27, 28-year-old seasons that he pitched substantial innings and made a lot of appearances when he was still being used out of the pen. And this year, he's pitching for a contract. So I guess I would be more surprised if he didn't put up another 170-inning-plus season.
I hope so. He deserves to get paid next year.
Sure, I would not be surprised whatsoever if he pitched under 170 innings, because I would not be surprised if any pitcher, except for maybe Max Scherzer, didn't pitch 170 innings.
Yeah.
Just for injury reasons, that's it. Even Chris Sale, even David Price, all of them.
Bite your goddamn tongue.
Do you know he finished with the same ERA 2 years in a row, 3.32? I just realized that.
Pomerantz, those two seasons are like crazy similar.
Yeah.
3.8 FIP in 2016, 3.84 in 2017. I did a whole thing about this not too long ago, but I don't remember the other similarities.
Yeah, the only real difference I see is that he gave up a little bit fewer home runs in 2017 and won more games. But yeah, pretty much identical.
Yeah, I love Pomerantz.
All right, so moving on to other spring training news. The event that you guys have all been waiting for happened. Mookie Betts got his first hit. And he was rewarded with a really ugly, freaky statue thing of him that someone made. What the hell was that thing that you tweeted out the other day, Matt?
I don't know. It's like some figurine that some company was selling that I saw on Reddit, and it freaked me out. So I had to share it with the world. It's called Ikies, I think is how you say it. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, it really didn't do him justice. Mookie Betts is a handsome man, and that thing is horrifying looking.
Yeah, it doesn't look like Mookie Betts. So no.
Looked like a
people will buy anything. People will buy anything. That's my only takeaway, because that was horrifying.
Yeah. Well, if you haven't seen it yet, please go to the OTM Twitter and horrify yourself. So, yeah. Any thoughts on Mookie, guys? Any concerns or anything? Or are you guys just like think it's pretty funny that he didn't get a hit until now?
I don't know if it's funny, but I don't think it's concerning either.
I think it's hilarious. You know, I was listening to, what on earth was I listening to today? Was it the Baseball Tonight podcast? It was the game. I was listening to the game today, and they were saying that the feeling around the team was that Benintendi was going to be the team's MVP. And as much as I would like to agree with that, I no longer believe that.
Hanley said that Benintendi was going to be the MVP.
That's okay. That's what? That's what
they're yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Hey, come on now.
I mean, I picked it last year's OTM predictions. I'm just saying.
I mean, I love Benintendi.
I said
much
that
as
he was
going to
be the
guy,
team MVP
but
last year. I did say that.
Come on, guys. He's not even. He's not,
it was a bold prediction, Jake. Let's
he's
get
not
the
comparable talent-wise to Mookie Betts, though. Can we agree
he's
with that?
He's comparable talent-wise to Mookie Betts. He's just not as good, but you could compare them. I mean, I don't mean that you could compare any two guys, but it's within reason that he puts up a better season than Betts. It's not likely, but it's definitely within reason.
Oh, man, I don't know. I think that there will be a point in time where Mookie Betts has a worse year than Benintendi at the same time, but I don't think that will happen for some years.
I don't see why it couldn't happen this year. I don't think it's going to happen very often, but it could happen. I don't know. This is a stupid conversation.
I was just telling you what Hanley said, Jake.
I know. I like that quote. I love Hanley.
You do.
That's classic Hanley being a weirdo.
He's just stirring the pot.
Yeah. Trying to get Jake all riled up, and it worked.
That's right. All right. Any more thoughts on this? No?
I don't even know what we were talking about, so no.
Okay. All right. So Alex Cora, new manager of the Boston Red Sox, has recently said that the bullpen could have no lefties in it to start the year. Do you guys actually believe him when he says this? And also, he says that he's not going to have a set eighth inning guy. Everybody kind of thinks it's going to be Carson Smith, but I mean, I guess it could be a mixture of guys. What do you guys think?
So with the eighth inning, I think he's definitely telling the truth there. These guys are close enough. Smith, Kelly, Barnes, Thornburg, if and when he's healthy, they're relatively close enough where you kind of just want to use their skill sets wherever they make the most sense. So if you're facing a team with a lot of righties who struggle against sliders, then you're going to want to use Smith in the most important parts. If you're facing teams with good lefties, Thornburg is the best guy at getting lefties out of that group. You need a ground ball, Kelly's the guy. You need a strikeout, Barnes is the guy. So I think that we all want Smith to be that guy, but he hasn't really proven it yet. So until they definitely have a dominant force, then you kind of just play the matchups and whatever makes the most sense at any given time.
Would you guys agree that if everybody is at their peak health, though, that Carson Smith has a higher level than any of those other guys in the bullpen, aside from Kimbrel?
Yeah, but I think Thornburg's probably a little bit closer than people give it credit for.
That's true. I think that we really just got to wait to see with Thornburg. I just, you know, Carson Smith went through a lot too, and he came back and he seems to be just as good. But it seems like Thornburg's was a degree more. So
yeah,
we'll see. I hope he pushes Carson Smith, because Jake, to answer your question, I think Carson Smith is, in a vacuum, the best option. And then another way to look at it is, if Kimbrel got hurt, who do you think would close? And if it was one person, I would say probably Carson.
Yeah, I think that's a different discussion, though, because even if Smith is like the clear best guy, the eighth inning isn't always going to be the time you want to use that guy, you know? Like, if the middle of the order is coming up in the seventh, then you use Carson Smith then.
Yeah, I think he's just leaving it open to have that flexibility, right?
Yeah.
By saying this.
Yeah, I think that was my biggest takeaway, probably.
And getting back to the lefty thing, I think my fascination with Bobby Pointer aside, it does seem to me that if they have a lefty, it's likely to be Pointer. It's in part of the reason I say it is that in these same conversations where Cora says maybe we won't have a lefty, he's gone out of his way to talk up Pointer. So as much as that means anything, that was my take on it. So
yeah, I mean, I think they're probably going to carry a lefty at some points, and then at some points they're not. I mean, it's not like they have Brandon Workman and Austin Maddox, and the lefty is kind of fighting for a couple of spots, so none of those guys are so good that somebody's going to like demand a spot. They'll just kind of, depending on who's coming up and who they're playing, they'll have those guys riding the bus back and forth from Pawtucket.
I still really like Brandon Workman, and he's got one option left as well, which makes him kind of interesting.
Yeah, I like Workman too. I don't know how big his ceiling is, but I think I wouldn't be surprised at all if he's better than Heath Embry, for example.
Fewer players have had the more on the nose name than Brandon Workman.
Yeah,
he really is that guy. He's a workman-like guy.
Getting back to Thornburg, though, I am really worried about the recovery from the thoracic outlet surgery. It seems like that is a surgery that has tripped up a lot of pitchers and prevented them from ever being as good as they previously were. I mean, what is your level of concern with this, Matt?
I am extremely concerned, and I'm pretty much expecting nothing from him this year. I think anything Thornburg gives them is a bonus. There are guys who have come back from this procedure and looked pretty good. Jaime Garcia, Chris Young, other guys that I'm forgetting. But, I mean, there's been Matt Harvey and Tyson Ross. There's been a lot of high-profile guys who just haven't looked the same. And until Thornburg shows that he is the same guy, I'm just going to assume that he's kind of done, at least for the year.
You feel the same way, Brian?
Well, I'm surprised, given what Matt was just saying about Thornburg, to hear him turn around and say that, but...
Jake said that if everybody was healthy. And
okay.
So.
No, but okay, but still, I'm not owning you or slamming you.
I sounded like I was getting roasted right there.
No. I did not get out of my car in the Target parking lot and just start throwing carts around.
Smashing windshields.
It's unbelievable. But I'm similarly pessimistic, and I think that is why I think I sort of indicated that before, but I'm not optimistic on Thornburg at all.
Yeah, I am not optimistic either. It's going to be interesting to see how he recovers. You know, a lot of outlets are actually predicting him to pitch a significant number of innings this year. I'm looking at one projection system right here. It has him at 46 innings pitched with 57 strikeouts and an ERA under 3. I would be shocked if he had numbers anywhere close to that this year.
Who's that?
This is from Roster Resource, their projections, which I think they might be pulled from Baseball Prospectus.
I have no idea.
But yeah, I mean, it does seem really favorable.
Yeah, I'll take the under. on that.
All right, so we're going to move to listener questions now. We've got a bunch of different questions today. Our first one comes from Clayton Trutor, and he asks us, who has been more influential on fashion in New Hampshire, Lou Merlone or Kevin Euclid? Truthfully, guys, I don't even know what this means, and I have no idea.
I do not understand this question.
Yeah, like,
I was kind of hoping you weren't going to read this one.
Yeah. Brian, do you have any clue what this guy's talking about?
I know that guy's name because I remember he had a website called American Polymath, and I thought that was a great name for a site.
Oh, that is a good name.
But I don't have any idea. I'll go with Euclid because Merlone is sort of a – I don't know. He's not as charming as I would have expected, or is in fact the opposite a lot of the time. Whereas Euclid, I mean, I'm talking social media – which is an outgrowth, obviously, of Merlone being on the radio. But Euclid is just a great guy and a great dude, and he's got no hair, and neither do I. So I'm going with Euc.
Yeah, I guess from what I know about Euc, you know, he just opened up a brewery in, I think, the Bay Area. I think he seems like a pretty cool guy. I bet he has decent style. None of this has a...
Here's something that's relevant. Do you remember when Euc was like, I'm going to play my last year in Japan just because I want to live in Japan?
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah. He got style. He went there. He saw things that we can't even comprehend. It's like you watch any cooking show. They go there and they're like, oh, I thought I knew everything. Then I got to Japan. Literally every show.
I've never seen that in any area of life, but I'm going to take your word for it.
I would really like to go to Japan.
I would love it if we weren't talking about this question anymore.
I love this question! I'm going to say Euc.
All right. Next question comes from New Year Dave, and he says, what do you think is the biggest concern with position players this year? Brian, what's your biggest concern with position players?
I guess what's going to happen with Pedroia?
Okay. What do you think is going to happen with Pedroia?
I hope he's better. I'm not, you know, I'm not convinced. But I think that this is it's a good problem. First of all, it's not good for Dustin Pedroia that this problem is, like, far down the list now. But I think that there's a chance that he's not all that great, which is fine. You know, his defense is going to be good. We know that. But I think that the biggest question is how much he's recovered, and even if he has, how sustainable that recovery is. We've talked about it before that he was trying to recover in such a way that would help him stay healthy longer instead of just getting back up to speed and jumping back in. So we'll see that, but I think the thing is we just don't know at this point.
Matt, do you have a different guy?
I don't have a guy, but I was going to say infield defense.
Okay.
Devers, Bogarts, Nunez isn't great. Hanley's probably going to be seeing some time at first. Like Brian said, we don't know when Pedroia is going to be back or how long he's going to be back for. So I think the infield defense could be a little rough this year.
Yeah, I'll agree with both of those things. I think I'll add my healthy skepticism of Hanley Ramirez having a good season at the plate to this. So, I think that's where I'm at with that. Brian Phillips has our next question. He says, what would it take to acquire Bartolo from the Rangers? I can't see a title run without a dynamic, versatile presence like him on the roster in 2018. I'll hang up and listen. Guys, what would it
prime
take?
Rib?
Huh?
Prime rib?
Prime rib? Just one prime rib night you think would do it?
No. A lot more. A lot. Do you know the Boston Molasses Flood? Of course you do. You're a historian.
Yep.
That, forget prime rib. Just that amount of molasses again for him.
That moved several buildings off of their foundations.
You know, apparently for summers long afterward, you could smell it.
Yeah.
When it comes to hot.
And I'm not being sarcastic. I didn't know any of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a very shoddily constructed tub.
I don't think that if a team wanted to acquire Bartolo Colon, that it would be very difficult.
I don't think didn't he just sign with them?
Yeah, he did.
But he can't be traded. It would be very difficult.
Really?
He can't be traded until June 15th.
Oh.
Well, I don't think they'd be going after him until then anyway. Well, I think we'll see.
Okay. I didn't know we were really taking that question too seriously.
No, it's hilarious. Yeah. All right, next question here is Daniel J. Turnbull. He says, what role will Stephen Wright have this year, especially with injury concerns already plaguing Drew Pomerantz? And Blake Swihart looks incredibly driven, obviously put a ton of work in the offseason, performing head and shoulders above Sandy Leon. What should be done there? Thanks, guys.
Hey, I have no reason to believe Sandy Leon did anything but put in a ton of work in the offseason. So I just want to throw that out there.
I'm also not sure that I'm not sure that Swihart has done enough to pass Leon catching wise. I'm not sure. That's
I agree. I wrote about this the other day. I don't think we've talked enough about how much we don't know about Swihart's defense. Not only catching, but just like all over the place.
I don't know, man. I'm going to go back to the fact that all of his scouting reports on his defense were always very, very positive throughout the minor leagues.
They were positive in that people thought that he was going to be able to get to the point where he could be a good defensive catcher, but then he lost a couple years of that development.
But he's also been working with this same staff, a lot of the same pitchers, for now the last 3 years. And even though he's been hurt for some of this time, I'm sure he's sitting in on meetings and, you know, figuring out what these guys like to throw and how they like their games called and all that stuff.
Yeah, but every catcher does that.
Yeah, and he might be fine. But, I mean, we know Sandy Leon is going to be a solid defensive presence.
Jake, you love him so much. Take it so personally.
He's really good. I just
he's not really good.
He's really good.
He might be. Yeah. I don't know that. I would not be that confident in saying that, but he might be.
He's good compared to me. He will get more than one hit.
We're not going into that again.
No, no we did. I just
no, Brian. All right, well, that about does it for listener questions. So with that, anything else you guys want to add before we close out the show today?
I can't wait until there's actual baseball to talk about.
I was in listening to the game today. Tim Neverett was talking about the other guy who was announcing it wasn't Castiglione. I don't know who it was. Said that Chris Archer did Muay Thai, and he was starting to be like, oh, what is that? And Tim Neverett busts in and is like, oh, it's great. I went to Bangkok a few years ago. I went to a Muay Thai match, and it was awesome. And I am honestly saying it was cool. So that's just another way of saying that I love baseball on the radio, and I'm glad it's back. I would like real baseball to happen, though.
I don't
that's
know how
to
respond
to that. Oh, there's no story except Tim Neverett went to Bangkok and saw Muay Thai.
All right.
That's very happy. Cool.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I'm glad that he did that.
Our announcers expand their horizons.
Yeah, it's a good thing. It's a positive thing. All right, we're going to get off this podcast right now. If you did enjoy this one by some act of God, you can follow us on Twitter or...
yeah, that's what it's called.
Yep, Twitter. The Twitter machine, you can follow Brian at Brian Joyner, Brian with a Y, Joyner with an I. You can follow Matt Collins on Twitter at Matt R.Y. Collins, and you can follow myself on Twitter at Dev Jake. If you like the show, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere you get podcasts, and we will be with you next week as normal.